ministry of Faith Baptist Church in Ontario, Ohio. I'm Pastor Dave Davenport. Today we're studying in the book of Revelation, and we're in chapter 13. I trust you'll have your Bible open and stay with us for the next several minutes as we go to the Word. Let's take your Bibles, if you would, please, and let's go to the book of Revelation. In chapter 13, I want to talk to you about the beasts and the brave. I also remind us that those videos are going up on YouTube for an entire series on Revelation for those who may be interested, you know, that maybe they missed a week. They can be able to pull it up on YouTube. But also, if the rapture were to happen at any given moment, there it would be. Some field manual explanations for people who may be left behind. And I say that as well to say a lot of our radio listening audience do not know we're on YouTube either. So maybe some of them can pull it up and also draw down on the messages there. So we're going to be in 13 and 14 today. And I want to try to give you an aerial view of it just to give you the highlights. If you want the more detailed version, you can pull that up on sermonaudio.com. So with that said, look at verse 1, and this is chapter 13 of the book of Revelation. John writes and says, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority." Now, as we take in just 2 simple verses, remember that these are details that must be understood in order to grasp the gravity of the moment. John is still in a parenthetical insert. The narrative chronologically is not moving forward. What he is actually getting is a glimpse of what really has been going on in the grassroots of the world over the past number of years. The tribulation will consist of 7 years completely, but the last half of that 7-year period, which is known as the Great Tribulation, is that which is to be understood right here when he gives us a description of what he sees. This chapter will show us 2 beasts. These are Therion, which means these are beasts, vicious and merciless. These are very, very terrifying beasts to behold. The first beast is coming up out of the sea. The second beast is in verse 11, coming up out of the earth. So you get a little bit of a lay of the land. The first beast has some very unique characteristics. First of which is he comes up out of the sea. Now understand, when the Bible speaks of the sea, it is talking about the masses of humanity. We talk about the sea of humanity. If you want a specific definition for it, it's in chapter 17, when the Bible tells us that John is instructed about the sea which he saw are the multitudes, nations, and tongues that worship the beast. So the sea represents the multitudes, nations, and tongues. And why is it a sea? It's a sea because as the sea is always in a state of flux and chaos and upheaval, we see that this sea is representing that kind of a situation. Whoever this beast specifically will end up being, he will come from the midst of the sea of humanity, which makes us to believe he probably will have more of a Gentile identity than a Jewish identity. However, there may come to the fore a Jewish identity because the people of Israel are going to think of him as a Messiah. So he may come in one guise, but be revealed to have some moorings in the Jewish lineage. But we see him as one who comes up out of the sea, and he's a beast. And he rises up out of the sea, having 7 heads, 10 horns, and upon his horns, 10 crowns, and upon his heads, the name of blasphemy. So we see a couple of things here that are cryptic, decidedly. These are cryptic intentionally, because God would have his secret maintained. But this is the revelation of Jesus. Therefore, all of the cloaks come off. Okay? Up to this point, there was a whole lot of mystery about Babylon. There was a mystery about the beasts that were going to come. And now we're beginning to see a little bit more clearly because God gives us more definitive information. Now, He doesn't do it here as much as He will do it in chapter 17, where He will tell us about these beasts and so forth. But we, having this grand scope from Genesis to Revelation to draw down upon, we can see what these represent. It says He has 7 heads and 10 horns. I will tell you that when it talks about 7 heads, this references what is also referenced in chapter 17 as being 7 mountains. The 7 heads represent 7 universal kingdoms representing the continuum of the times of the Gentiles. What we have is 7 in number. I will give them to you. You can kind of maybe make a quick scribble of a note and maybe just put the first letter, because I'm going to give them to you quick and I won't review them, but I'll just write the first letter down and you can fill it in later. The first one would represent for us Egypt. The second one would represent for us Assyria. The third one would be Babylon. The fourth one would be the Medo-Persian Empire. The fifth would be the Grecian Empire. And the sixth would be the Roman Empire Stage 1. And the seventh would be the Roman Empire Stage 2. And I just kind of hold that for a second. I'll drill into it here in a minute. But understand, these imperial kingdoms that were in the world throughout our history were something that God continued to amplify and show us. Egypt, for instance, represents so much of history with Israel in the book of Genesis. The people of Israel immigrated into Egypt, became bond slaves there and so forth, and God delivers them and they become what we might call an example for all of history from the outset of a kingdom that would have someone who would say they were God incarnate. Pharaohs thought of themselves as God incarnate in their own way. The Assyrians also were a universal kingdom, and they were the ones that carry away Israel later in history when Israel and Judah had split. It was Israel that was the older sister, and she began to be bad from the get-go. You recall they had the golden calf at the southernmost border of the northern kingdom and a golden calf at the northern border, and they were so bad. Judah had the temple worship, but these guys, God brings Assyria to be His battle axe to take Israel down. And what we find is He does it in such a remarkable way. You may recall the narrative when you think about it in your minds, how that when God took Israel down, the Assyrians had carried them away, and then they thought, you know what, we're going to go down and take Judah too. And they come down against Judah, and it looks bad, and Hezekiah is the king at the time. And you may recall there was over 180,000 soldiers outside of the walls of Jerusalem. 180,000 soldiers. And what happens is God tells Hezekiah, because you've humbled yourself, I've heard you, it's not your time yet. And He says, I've got this, you be at peace. And the next morning when everybody woke up that was still living, 180,000 soldiers were dead on the battlefield. The angel of the Lord went through and wiped them out. And all of Assyria was humbled and they went home with head in hand, as they say. There was a great deliverance from them. But Assyria was a worldwide kingdom. And then you had, after them, Babylon. Babylon came into their own. And when Babylon came, they were the glory of all kingdoms. And what's unique about Babylon is it was Nebuchadnezzar that actually got converted. In chapter 4 of Daniel's narrative, we find that he got converted. And it was, in fact, Nebuchadnezzar who actually had these dreams. And you recall that big image? And the image had a golden head, and it had silver arms, and then it had loins that were brass. And then down you had the legs of brass, or the feet of iron mixed with clay and so forth. You had 4 different sections. And what ends up happening is Daniel gives him the interpretation of this. He says, you, King Nebuchadnezzar, you're the head of gold, the glory of all kingdoms. But after you, another will come, arms representing Medes and the Persians. And he gets the picture of not 7 kingdoms, but 4 that were yet to come. And with these legs that are like iron, the Bible talks about the feet being the iron mixed with clay, and then the 10 toes. And all of this comes to play in Revelation 13. Because what we're told is there's seven mountains, but all of these kingdoms are represented by these seven mountains. In fact, he will drill into these last four parts a little bit more deliberately. He says that there are seven heads, but there are 10 horns. That answers to the 10 toes, because it says, and upon the 10 horns were 10 crowns. So you see, these 10 horns are power brokers in the last days, and they have crowns, which means they're kings. In chapter 17, we're going to see that there's going to be 10 kings, and they're going to have one heart to give their authority to the beast, the Antichrist, who will rise above them all. And what I'm saying, and I don't want to get too bogged down in the details, but God does get down into the details. Some of the details he brings forward here in verse 2 are, and the beast, it says, and the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, which means he reminds us of what Alexander the Great was. The speed with which this guy, see, that's one of the main things he brings out. He's like at the speed of a leopard, like Alexander did. Alexander the Great was referred to in Daniel's prophecy as being like a leopard. In fact, when you drill into Alexander the Great's experience, he always knew he was going to be a conqueror of the world. From the very earliest days, he only lived to be just over 30, like 31 years old. He knew it. And one of the reasons he knew it was he had a dream he was going to do it. And so he just followed his dream. But one time he got really angry with the people at Jerusalem because he says, I need supplies, you need to send them. And they said, we've already made an agreement with the Medes and the Persians. We really can't. Sorry, we're not against you. We're not for you. We just can't. He says, well, when I'm done here, I'm going to wipe you guys out. What's crazy about it is if he came to wipe out Jerusalem, the high priest at that time actually had a dream. And what he dreamed was that he was supposed to get all dressed up in his high priestly garments and have all of the other underling priests all gathered, have the gates wide open and just greet him and meet him. Just go out there. And this was an act of faith on the high priest's part. But he said, God told me to do it. I'm going to do it. When Alexander the Great comes with his great army to destroy Jerusalem, he crests the hill and he tells everybody to stay. And he and his right-hand general, maybe a couple of others, went down to meet the priest. And when he got off of his horse, he literally went up to the priest and he bowed down in front of him. And nobody knew what in the world was going on. And when he got up off of his knees and having greeted this priest, his general privately asked him, what? You come here to destroy them and you're bowing down to this priest? He says, this is just no ordinary priest. When I was younger, I had a vision that I would one day walk into the midst of a group that were dressed exactly like this group is dressed. And he said, when I had that dream was when I was told that I would, in fact, conquer the world. He made friends with the Israelites that day because of the vision he had before he ever began a conquest. The priests walk him into Jerusalem and do entertain him and his people for a little bit of time. And while they were there, the priest opens the book of Daniel and says, God told us all about you. And he shows him about his place as being like a leopard and being a great conqueror. And he would be of the Grecian part. And he was overwhelmed. He said, what can I do for you? He says, just don't tax us. Just don't tax us. And there was one or two other little things. But they were given leave to never be taxed by Greece. This is God in the details of human history. It is recorded in Josephus, that very narrative I just gave you. Because God has always had his hand on his people. But the Antichrist will come from the crescendo of the times of the Gentiles. The times of the Gentiles are represented from Pharaoh all the way, really, until the final Roman Empire stage that we are basically entering into at the present moment. As European Union begins to try to knit itself together in such a way to find strength, you know, of Brexit, how everybody wanted to become nationalistic. All of that stuff is these pullings back and forth, the sea, like, you know, upheavals. What will happen ultimately will be 10 kings will find a way to put this thing together.